Prison Radio on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on www.cqut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune in to the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, or on the second Thursday of every month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio or finding help searching for past programs, email prison@cqut.ca.
Consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had. Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number. You weren't a name. You want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
Oh, the law. The law. When they hang my husband, is that just...
Good morning. You are listening to Prison Radio here on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. We are broadcasting live from McGill University. My name is Candace.
My name is Noah.
And we're your hosts for today's show. Today on the show, we'll be picking back up on a theme from one of the interviews we aired earlier this year, talking with kids about prison, and airing an interview with a 10-year-old who has some thoughts and questions about prisons to share with us. We also bring you an interview, which we are rebroadcasting from The Final Straw, about the TIER program being implemented in Georgia State Prison. But first, we bring you some news.
The International Coalition to Free the Angola 3 reports that a U.S. federal appeals court has ordered former Black Panther Albert Woodfox, the longest-serving prisoner in solitary confinement, to remain behind bars. Woodfox has spent 43 years in solitary for the murder of a prison guard, a crime for which he and late fellow Angola 3 member Herman Wallace say they were framed for their political activism. Woodfox's two previous convictions for the crime have both been overturned, but Louisiana officials are now seeking a third trial. On Friday, June 12th, since the last episode of Prison Radio Show, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals extended a stay on the judge's order for his release, meaning it could be weeks or months until Woodfox is potentially freed. You can write to Albert Woodfox, number 72148, West Feliciana Parish Detention Center, P.O. Box 2727, St. Francisville, Louisiana, 70775. Aboriginal prisoners are overrepresented in Canada's federal prisons and waiting longer for parole, according to new numbers from Public Safety Canada, which is responsible for corrections. In its final report, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission called for governments to eliminate the overrepresentation of Aboriginal people in custody over the next 10 years. The TRC calls to action include 17 recommendations related to justice, such as creating more programs and services for offenders with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, calling on all levels of government to work with Aboriginal communities to provide culturally relevant services to inmates on such issues as substance abuse, family, and domestic violence, and sexual abuse, and ensure lawyers receive training about the legacy of residential schools, treaties, and Indigenous law. In response to the TRC recommendations, a spokesman for the Canadian Ministry of Public Safety, Jeremy Lauren, told CBC in an email, quote, "Our conservative government believes that criminals belong behind bars. Offenders have access to correctional programming that addresses their criminality." Unquote. In Arizona, more than 200 immigrants inside the privately run Eloy Detention Center have launched a hunger strike. They're protesting inhumane conditions and demanding an independent probe after they say two prisoners died following abuse by guards. The migrant justice group Puente says the hunger strikers faced immediate retaliation on the first day of the strike in mid-June when they were locked out in the 100-degree yard without shade or water for 6 hours.
Six Yemeni prisoners have been transferred from Guantanamo to Oman, marking the first release from the military prison in 5 months. The six men have been held without trial for more than 13 years. One of the prisoners, Imad Abdullah Hassan, has staged hunger strikes for years over his imprisonment without charge. Despite United States President Barack Obama's 2009 vow to close Guantanamo within a year, 116 prisoners now remain. In Guantanamo, hunger has dominated daily life since 2005, when detainees like Ahmed Zubair, imprisoned without charge for 7 years, started the first wave of hunger strikes. Guantanamo detainees regularly stage hunger strikes in protest of their indefinite detention. An open letter signed by one of the striking detainees reads, and this is a quote, "I do not wish to die, but I am prepared to run the risk that I may end up doing so because I am protesting the fact that I have been locked up for more than a decade without a trial, subjected to inhuman and degrading treatment, and denied access to justice." End quote. In a report on the force feeding of hunger-striking prisoners at Guantanamo Bay that made headlines a few years ago in 2013, Briar Patch magazine posited that hunger strikes work because while power can attempt to control everything in an individual's environment, it cannot control an individual's will. The force feeding of prisoners on hunger strike at Guantanamo further underlines the point that the more resistance threatens the dominant order, the more brutal its obliteration. The United States Supreme Court has made it easier for prisoners awaiting trial to sue guards for using excessive force. In a 5-4 ruling, the United States Court ruled in favor of Michael Kingsley, a Wisconsin man who was awaiting trial on drug charges when guards removed him from his cell and shocked him with a stun gun for refusing to remove a sheet of paper covering a light fixture. And finally, good news south of the border in Columbia, at Columbia University in New York will divest from the private prison industry following 16 months of student protests, becoming the first university in the United States to do so. Organizers of the Columbia Prison Divest campaign say they were notified Monday that Columbia's Board of Trustees had decided to heed calls to divest from Corrections Corporation of America and G4S and to ban reinvestment in private prison firms in the future.
Here on the Prison Radio Show, we've been working on a series of interviews talking with kids about prison and prison abolition. Back in January, we aired an interview with Franca, who's 10, in which Prison Radio Show's Virginia talked with Franca about prisons, racism, colonialism, and what a world without prisons might be like. Today on our show, we bring you an interview with another 10-year-old named Siobhan and some of her thoughts and questions about prison.
Perfect. So, first, do you want to tell me your name? You don't want to tell me your name? That's okay, too.
No. Okay, turn it off.
Why? We can just let it keep going.
Okay. All I was going to say is that you should, like, say, like, okay, so this is my interview.
Oh, okay, this is my interview with Siobhan about
prison.
I can edit all of this out later.
Okay, fine, then just ask me what my name. Okay.
Okay, what's your
renew.
No, renew. We don't need to renew.
You ready?
Ready.
No, just start.
What's your name?
My name is Siobhan.
And how old are you?
I'm 10.
And what's your favorite subject in school?
Art.
And what do you like to do when you're not at school?
Well, I like to play outside and play with my friends, and I like to play with my stuff and read and you know, sometimes watch TV, but I'm not allowed that much, so, yeah.
When did you first hear about prisons?
I don't really remember the time, but what I remember is that I guess I heard some people talking about it, and then sooner or later, I think my mom just told me about it, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And do you remember what she said when she told you about it?
Well, I didn't remember exactly what she said, but I remember just, like, how she says that she is against it because, you know, like, when somebody does something wrong, you know, like, instead of, like, you know, like, locking them up in a prison, you know, you could help them in something like that, you know, like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you think about prison?
Well, I don't really think that's right either. I kind of think a little bit like my mom, but I have some other things to say also. I think, yeah, you should help them instead of, you know, locking them up because it's like a cage, you know, like when you go to the zoo, and it's kind of like, you know, like kind of like that. So I just think that, you know, when people make mistakes, it's, you know, we're just human, you know, we're not perfect and stuff. And also, you know, just because they did that doesn't mean that they're a bad person, you know? Yeah.
You have people in your life who've done a lot of time in prison.
Yeah.
What have your relationships with them been like?
Well, it's like my mom knew them before me, obviously, but they're really nice. I knew a bunch of people, but all of them are like really nice. None of them are bad people. I know that they're all really nice.
So in the States, a lot of times people talk about schools being a bit like prisons, and there's like security guards and metal detectors at the front, and you know, people get thrown in detention. There's like these things called zero tolerance policies at schools, where if you get in trouble at school more than once or twice, you get expelled and you could do time in a juvenile facility. What do you think about like schools?
Like my school? Prison.
Yeah.
I don't think my school is like a prison because it doesn't have all that stuff. And when I get a detention, it's usually just in my class. And if you'll get it more than twice, you don't get expelled. I don't really think it's like that because there's no security guards. It's not really like a prison to me. It's more like just like a school. Yeah, mm-hmm. It acts like a school. But I would say that, you know, sometimes people, you know, like those phones on the wall that you have to pay like 25 cents. I see sometimes kids do, like, they're not really thinking. And you know how you don't have to pay to press 911? Well, I don't know who, but I think like one or twice, I don't know, like once a year, I don't know how many times, but usually sometimes when you call 911, you don't have to pay. So then they call it and then they hang up the phone, but the police still know that they were there. So, the police come sometimes, but that's like rare. That's very, very rare. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that people who are against prison talk about a lot is trying to figure out ways to solve conflict amongst ourselves. Have you ever ended up in situations with friends where you've been solving conflicts together?
Yeah, I, you know, like, if I ever got in a fight or something, I just start by, you know, saying that, like, we're best friends and stuff, and I don't know if we should be fighting, but, you know, sometimes that's kind of hard, because when you get into a fight, it's just, like, not that, you know, like, it's a little bit hard. So what I just said was, to her, what I said to her was that, like, when I get into a fight, sometimes, I mean, I just get really angry, and, you know, the anger rushes to me, and then, you know, it feels kind of upsetting. But also, I mean, when I see people getting into a fight, I'll try to help, but I don't know if it's the best thing to do right then, like, when they're getting into a fight.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that we should have prisons?
No, but it's kind of hard to imagine, you know, but I think that instead you should have people that should help them, you know? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so then.
So often when people talk about a world without prisons, they also mean a world without police. What do you think of the police?
Well, the police, it's kind of like, I'm also against them because, you know, they involve a lot with prison and stuff, but, that they, you know, like when somebody kills somebody or is involved with a killing or something, you know, they get put in prison for like 30 years, you know, like most of their life is spent there, and it's, you know, kind of sad, but the police get to kill like a whole bunch of people, you know, so, and then they don't get any consequences, just like, oh, I killed somebody, okay, you know.
Do you ever talk to your friends about what you think about police and prisons?
Not a lot, but I think I know that my friends know that my mom is against it, because stuff like that, yeah, mm-hmm. I think they know. But I never really talk to them directly about it, you know, because we just, you know, do other stuff, yeah.
So when you talk about being against prisons, you talk about wanting to help people instead of putting them in prison. Yeah. What do you mean when you say helping people?
You know, when they do something, they should get help to stop doing it, or, you know, they help you to, you know, like, to know what to do, and instead of bringing them there so they remember that, you know, you should just help them to stop doing it, and you should help them, you know, just in a way that's nice, and you should say, like, okay, this is your one thing, okay, so now to stop doing that, you have to, you know, and then you could say, like, that's sort of helping them, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Often when we talk about having a world without prison, it's hard to imagine that existing because our world is so different right now.
Yeah.
Do you find that you have trouble imagining what things could be like?
Yeah, because, you know, even though people could help, I mean, like, I don't know, I'm still really, you know, I'm only 10, but I mean, like, it's kind of hard to imagine it because, you know, our world has already started that, so it's a little bit hard to imagine them without, you know, police in prison because, you know, but I mean, I'm only young, maybe, like, the adults could imagine it, but I don't know how to imagine it.
It's funny because they usually say that kids have better imaginations than adults.
Yeah, I mean, like, I do have an imagination, but seeing, like, the real things, like, real things that are happening right now, like, picturing the world, we don't usually think about those things a lot. So, you know, if I tried to imagine it, you know, I can imagine a little bit, but I don't know because I already know, like, this world. We usually don't imagine about the society, but, you know, yeah.
What would you do if you had the power to change all these things?
I would use it. I mean, I would use it to change, like, a changing power or something. Yeah, I would use it to change, you know, like, prisons instead of, and change it with the, like, the helping idea, like, as I said, and, you know, and the, instead of police, it's the people helping them, you know, and I don't know how it'll turn out. So if I had changing power, and if it wasn't, like, if it was working a lot worse, then I could change it back.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you think you do have changing power?
No. Yeah, you know, like, I could go on strike and stuff like that, but, I mean, you know, like, not everybody's gonna follow me, and then, so then it's not gonna stop it, because I can't go against, you know, yeah.
You mean, like, going on strike at school?
Yeah. You know, like, they usually don't really win, you know? So, yeah.
So, you said that your favorite subject is art.
Yeah.
Do you ever draw prisons, or draw things, or draw worlds without prisons in them?
I do draw worlds, but I think I draw a lot of other things. I think I draw, like, a world, a nice world, where, you know, there's not a lot of construction, and where there's, you know, not a lot of bad things happening, like pollution or, you know, I guess, I mean, I guess that kind of relates to a world without a prison. Yeah, kind of.
Do you guys talk about colonialism in school?
What?
Do you ever talk about colonialism
in school? What is that?
It's like, colonialism is the way that Canada started. So there were Indigenous people who lived here, still live here.
Yeah, we know that, but sometimes, you know, they don't say all the truth that, you know, other people know that is actually the true thing.
I was just saying that because I think colonization and prisons are connected. Like, some people say that some of the first prisons in Canada were reserves because Indigenous people weren't allowed off the reserves. Did you know that Indigenous people, even though they're only like 4 or 5% of the population, are like 30 to 40% of the population in prison?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, I did not hear that, but thanks for letting me know that. Now I know some more history.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty fucked up.
You, what you
yeah, you
think?
Can ask me what I think.
Okay, so what's your name?
My name's Virginia.
So, how old are you?
30.
Okay, so what do you think about prison?
I think prisons are pretty shitty places. I think they are, I mean, they do exactly what they're supposed to do, which is, like, confine people who the government thinks are undesirable or, you know, shouldn't be in the rest of society with us. I think prisons are colonial institutions. They come from Canada's history of confining and trying to repress Indigenous people in this country. They're pretty racist places too. I know that if you're a Black person in Canada, I think it's something like you're 8 times more likely to end up in prison than white people in Canada. Yeah, I think prisons are pretty shitty.
What do you think we should do instead of having prisons?
So I think that's a tricky question, but I'm into this thing that's called transformative justice and these things that are called community accountability processes. Basically, I think we need to figure out ways to deal with conflict ourselves. So, you know, pushing ourselves to be more present in situations where we would tend to, like, back away and call the cops, to push ourselves to, you know, intervene in those conflicts ourselves and see how that goes, because oftentimes people who are close to a conflict have ways that they can de-escalate it that don't involve the police and that don't involve prisons. I think we need to take power back into our own communities in terms of dealing with conflict. Like, the courts basically exist as like a middle person between people who are having a conflict, and I think we don't need them. We can deal with conflict on our own.
Have you ever been in, like, a conflict and, you know, like, what did you think about it?
In terms of, like, super physical conflicts, I think sometimes it can be really scary to, like, approach people who are, like, starting to get really, like, agitated and physical with each other. But sometimes just standing in between them and talking, like, slowly can help de-escalate things a bit. I also think that giving people space to talk about some of the terrible things that they've been through and supporting people to be able to tell their own stories is another way to deal with conflict. Like, oftentimes people end up in conflict because they are having trouble listening to each other. And so creating spaces where people feel listened to can make conflict exist less in our world.
Have you ever been a witness to, like, a conflict, and did you do anything to help, or what do you think you should do, or, you know, stuff like that?
I've definitely witnessed a lot of conflicts in my life. A lot of them have been with the police. It's hard to de-escalate with the police because they have guns and we don't most often. Pretty heavily ingrained with the idea that, like, if you see people having a fight and you don't know them, like, you shouldn't intervene, you should probably call the police, and it's been, yeah, I don't want to. So it's been good to be thinking a lot about what I would do in those situations so that next time it happens, I can push myself to intervene more than I would otherwise.
I just want to ask you just a little question. So I just want to ask you a little question here. I don't know if it's going to be my last or not, but I know you know some people that were in for a long time, for most of their lives or for a little bit, I don't know. But do you think that they're nice? Like, what do you think?
Everyone I've met inside seems like they're defying the stereotype that I've been taught for my whole life about, like, who criminals are and what they're like and they're bad people and whatever. And then I meet these people inside and they're really gracious and are curious about my life and want to tell me the stories that they've been through. And oftentimes they've had, like, really, really rough times. And they're still willing to, like, share those stories with me and with the people that come inside with me.
Thanks for doing this interview with me.
No problem. Thanks for talking to me.
And I also did an interview to you.
You did. Yeah, you really turned the tables.
Thanks for listening. Peace out.
The time is presently 11:25, and you're listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca. That was an interview with Siobhan, 10-year-old we know, talking to Prison Radio Show's Virginia about some of her thoughts on prison. We're hoping to continue airing interviews with kids about prison and prison abolition. If you know a young person who might want to talk to the Prison Radio Show, let us know. Or if you are a kid and you're listening to the show and want to talk to us, get in touch or ask someone to help you get in touch with us.
Come and celebrate 40 years of Carnival in Montreal. CCFA presents Carafiesta 40, celebrating 40 years of Carnival in Montreal.
40 years.
Come celebrate on Saturday, July 4th, starting at noon, from Fort and ending at Square Phillips. Carafiesta 40. For more information, log on to www.carafiesta.com.
A CKUT co-presentation.
Don't support the war on crime. Innocent people are doing.
Lock Us Away by Naked Aggression here on the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. Up next, we bring you part of an interview that we are rebroadcasting from The Final Straw. In this interview, hosts of The Final Straw talk with Earthworm Dell of the Atlanta Black Cross and Sandy, the mother of an inmate at Georgia State Prison. They're talking about the TEER program, which is being implemented there. The TEER program is being implemented in certain prisons in Georgia. It is a way in which those prisons are reducing the time that prisoners have outside of their cells. using minor accusations and infractions in order to severely limit hours that prisoners are allowed to spend outside of their cells.
This week, we'll be hearing an interview with Del McLean of Atlanta Black Cross and Sandy, who's the mother of an inmate at Georgia State Prison, about the TEER program implemented there. The TEER program is the means by which certain prisons in Georgia are reducing the time outside of cells for prisoners down to mere hours a week from multiple a day, based on minor accusations and infractions, and sometimes with no clear process towards getting out or limit of stay. While inside, these prisoners are kept on a minimal diet with no commissary, often no access to the library for legal research, along with other issues. More on what's going on with TEER at GSP can be found at atlblackcross.org. That's atlblackcross.org. You can read the words of prisoners there, You can read the words there written by the prisoners via their letters posted and transcribed at that site. Would you all care to introduce yourselves for the listening audience?
Yes, my name is Sandy, and I have a son that's incarcerated in Georgia Correctional Facility.
My name is Del McLean, but I go by Earthworm, and I've been a pen pal of several prisoners for the past few years since the 2012 hunger strike.
And we're going to be talking about the Georgia State Prison, GSP, outside of Reidsville, Georgia. Can you all talk about the prison and maybe give some specifics or specs and talk about the conditions there?
Well, Dale, I'll go back to you.
The hunger strike that's going on in the Reidsville prison is in protest of the TEER program there. Now, the TEER program is Georgia's version of a segregation unit. It's like a high-security kind of prison within a prison, and they put the people on segregation, meaning isolation in some cases. And now I've been told by a prisoner there that the TEER program prisoners are housed in a condemned part of the Georgia State Prison, and the conditions are just really harsh. So I can get into that now, or maybe we want to get more into the general.
And I understand that program is called a TEER program, and it supposedly goes into three steps where a person, they get in trouble from not having a haircut, maybe having on the wrong shirt, something minor. They can get from like 30 days, anything from 1 to 30 days for that first offense. And then the second one is a TEER 2 program where they keep getting into trouble and they'll go into a 9-month program. That time they get locked down in solitary confinement for 9 months. And the next step is the TEER 3 program, which is supposed to be for like 2 years. But I have just recently myself spoke with two family members that this one particular lady, she lives in Mexico. She's not even a citizen, don't have a green card. She had to get special permission to come over to the United States to even see her son. And she's actually there, here in the United States now, but she got to leave back on the 25th. But she could only see her son 4 times, but they did give her special permission to go the last time. But her son been in lockup for 21 months. And just the other day, this girl went to visit her brother, which she got really upset. And she was kind of, rude to the staff there. And her brother been in lockup since, for 4 years. So I know the TEER program is supposed to be step one, 30 days, then the second one, 90 days, and the next one, 2 years. But there are people that have been locked down and still being locked down from, like, 4 years to 6 years, and so on. So it's not.
And this is a problem that we've been seeing that a lot of the different prisoners have been reporting on, that they're supposed to get reviews for when their time is, when that they hit that 30 days or 90 days, and they're either not getting the reviews or they're just being rolled over and kept in that program. And that was actually a complaint in the 2012 hunger strikes as well, that they weren't being given their 30-day reviews for when they were put in segregation. But we're still seeing that. And another aspect of it is that the TEER program is used as punishment, which it's not supposed to be. It's supposed to be for if you're a significant threat to the safe functioning of the prison. But what we're seeing is if they don't like your attitude, or they don't like the racial group you belong to, or they don't like your political beliefs, you can get put in the cheer program for those things, or for speaking out.
Exactly.
So effectively, someone who's incarcerated there is supposed to be able to go through a review after that period of time that they've been in segregation, like you said. And what sort of recourse, if it's not being addressed, is there even just not paperwork and they're just getting left in those cells and it's not being addressed by officials because they don't want there to be a paper trail for them continuing to punish people in this manner?
Yes and no. It doesn't matter if a paper trail, who can you go to? It doesn't matter who you go to and who you talk to, you know, if nothing's going to get done. You know, you can have the paper, you can have the proof, but it's still going to just like, okay, we'll do this, and that's it. It goes no further, you know, because the TIER program came from the Department of Correction and Foresight. It was created there, I understand. You know, so they're the one that created it. They're the one that started it. And these people are getting there. Some people say they don't even take showers for weeks at a time. They get their food late. And not to mention it's hot. We know, see how hot it is outside now. You can imagine how hot it is inside of there.
So they say it's 90 or 100 degrees in the cells.
Yes. So, you know, it's just a really terrible condition, and not to mention, you know, I heard the cells are only, 9 by 12, size 12, that these people have to stay in constantly for 24 hours, which are really supposed to be 23 because I thought policists say they're supposed to have at least five hours a week outside, but a lot of prisons don't have that.
They're not getting it.
They're understaffed. Yeah, they're understaffed, and they don't have the room, so they don't do it.
So people are sitting in those cells 24/7, or some of them maybe get 1 or 2 hours outside a week, but they're not getting the yard time they're supposed to get.
What kind of human access are they getting? Like when they do get out, are they individually shipped off to whatever? Like, all right, now's your time for a shower, maybe a phone call, maybe, you know, time in the rec yard, but no contact with other prisoners because you're in the TIER program? Or are they at least allowed to congregate a little bit during that period of time or interact with each other?
By yelling through their, I guess, their cell doors, you know, yelling across the hall or through the cell doors or whatever, not even to get out and make a phone call. The phones are brought to them. They don't get out to make a phone call. The only thing they get out for is to go and take a shower, and they're handcuffed and shackled to go take a shower. And that's actually supposed to be for their protection, but they don't come out at all.
And the shackling brings up another concern that one prisoner wrote to me, which is the phenomenon of swirling, where either guards or other inmates beat someone who is shackled. And I got a letter from somebody who himself had been swirled.
And that kind of stuff do happen. And there are people that have died back in lockup.
Does that seem like the kind of coordinated effort, like on behalf of the guards, that they would allow other prisoners to do that, to vent out whatever, like, I don't know, competition or whatever they have with each other, or whatever clique they happen to be in?
This guy that I talked to said in his case, it was just the guards were afraid to intervene and they didn't feel like breaking it up. But I've also talked to people who were beaten by guards. And in that case, yes, it's a very coordinated thing, and the cover-up of it is coordinated as well.
So the communications that have been shared from prisoners on the Atlanta Black Cross website describe a number of physical, mental, emotional, dietary, and spiritual deprivations and degradations faced by inmates held in the TIER program. Can you all talk about some of those conditions based on the views of folks on the inside?
Well, sure. I mean, They're just getting denied everything. Actually, they're just they're deprived of everything because they're just put in a cell and they're just locked away there. Now, the ones that's fortunate enough to have some family members that can come to Little Time 2 hours twice a week to see them, they will get out and come up. But everybody else is just going to sit back there in the cell. You know, and they're not allowed. All their privileges are taken away. They're not allowed to participate in anything. And I think that's as far as going to church, you know, or doing anything.
So they're deprived of everything.
Reading materials. Pictures. They're not allowed to have pictures on tier two of the program. If you send them a letter that has an article or something with a picture in it, they'll send it back to you, rejected. One of the main complaints that I've been hearing from prisoners is that they're not allowed to flush their own toilets. So if you're sitting in a two-man cell, you're sitting there with the waste in the toilet until the guard comes by and flushes it from outside of the cell. And the guards are supposed to come by at a routine time, but sometimes they're understaffed and they don't make it by, or just out of spite, they refuse to flush the toilet. So that's just sitting there in the cell with them for hours and hours.
In the letter that was titled Tier Memoir, it referenced the argument that that exact thing was totally did not work at all in terms of the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution. Can you talk about what that argument is? And outside of human rights concerns, like actual legal concerns that people are bringing up in terms of the kind of stuff that GSP is pulling?
Well, the Eighth Amendment bans cruel and unusual punishments. So it seems pretty clear that a lot of the things that are happening to these guys are cruel. And maybe the prison officials say, well, it's not a punishment per se, but that's just a quibble. Obviously, what they're doing should not be allowed in terms of the beatings, in terms of underfeeding them. They're supposed to get a regulation 2,800 calories a day, but the meal trays don't come anywhere near that. And malnourishment among the tier prisoners is widespread. And the violence from the guards is just above and beyond the cruel and unusual concept. In fact, today I just got a letter from a prisoner who was raped by several guards, and now there's a cover-up trying to prevent him from getting the grievances filed. There's a Prison Rape Elimination Act that exists that requires that an independent investigator come 100% of the time when somebody's raped, but he hasn't been able to get in touch with that independent investigator. And he's requested the video footage that exists of each of these incidents and has been denied that. He's been denied medical care. I mean, these things, you couldn't do this to prisoners of war under the Geneva Convention, let alone to prisoners under the Eighth Amendment.
There was also mentioned some of the, I'm sorry to jump around, there's just so much that was in the letters that are on the website, like so many different effed up things. I would imagine they don't have access to programs, right? No programming. Do they have access to reading materials or any sort of like mental exercise things? Do they have access to religious reading materials, I'm wondering also?
Well, they have, they can exercise in a room, like, you know, do whatever calisthenics they want to do. And as far as I know, you can send reading material. You can send books and reading material, anything that they want to read that's allowed, you know, there. A lot of things are allowed there for them to read and stuff. But there are a lot of prisoners that's in there that don't have anybody on the outside to send them anything. So, you know, and those people, those are most of the ones that's locked up. You know, a lot of them that may be in trouble because they don't have anybody out here to do anything for them.
Isn't it right that Tier 2 prisoners are not allowed access to the library? Or am I mistaken about that?
Well, I don't think any of the tier, not just Tier 2, but Tier 1, 2, or 3 is have access because all their privileges are taken away. They're already, even to come to visitation, they're already shackled. The arms, the waist, and the feet are already shackled. They're not going to, and they're understaffed to even bring them out to visitation and stuff. So they're not going to send them to the library. All their privileges are taken away. Matter of fact, I mean, it's hard to get to the library even when you're not in the tier program, so I heard. So I don't think that tier two get to go to the library, and neither do tier one. I haven't heard of anybody yet so far that been in there that's been to the library in a tier program. They don't come out their cell, only to take a shower. That's it, 24/7. You know, I mean, it's just like an animal just caged in, and not allowed out. And it's cruel.
Is this program just being implemented at GSP, or are there other facilities in Georgia that are doing this?
The website says that GEARD program is located at Hanek, Hayes, Macon, Smith, Telfair, Valdosta, and Ware State Prisons, but obviously it's also at Georgia State Prison, so that might be out of date.
So all the, it seems like it's at all the maximum security prisons, but I know it's at all the max. Matter of fact, I think Hayes is like 90% lockdown. But they just started this about 2 years ago, not even quite 2 years ago.
So I just talked to some folks in Durham at the county jail in North Carolina, where they've been doing this thing called the lockback, which is kind of similar, it sounds like, to what y'all are going through, but obviously different because it's a county as opposed to state, and it's a different state. But one of the things that they were referencing in terms of decreased quality and amount of food that was being provided was the relationship between that institution and Aramark Services, which was providing health and mental health and food services for the county jail system, decreasing, like, for the sake of increased profit, decreasing the calories that prisoners are getting, going down from 3 hot meals a day to 2 sandwiches, and hoping that way to, like, press the inmates into purchasing food from the commissary that they would make money off of. What sort of... Is there that same sort of maltreatment of prisoners at GSP in relation to privatized services being provided, or is that not an issue there?
Well, in the TIER program that I know about, they don't have commissary anyway. So I think the malnutrition that they're suffering is just purely out of spite. The one explanation that I've heard indirectly through a prisoner letter is one prisoner said that he heard an official saying, well, we're glad you're losing weight because it'll be easier to beat you in a fight. So I think since the TIER program, prisoners have lost the commissary privileges, that doesn't apply.
Can you go into a little bit of detail, either Sandy or Dell, about what that decreased rationing of food looks like and the quality of it?
The letters that I've gotten have said that the trays are half portion every day, and on Saturday and Sunday they only get 2 trays. The rest of the days they're supposed to get 3 trays. And I have heard reports of people being denied trays by the guards just out of spite. And another report that I recently got from a prisoner was that there was a Confederate holiday. I think it was the Independence Day for the Confederacy, and the guards celebrated that Confederate holiday by denying prisoners food trays.
And can you say something about the racial dynamic in the prison in terms of, like, population of inmates and in terms of what the guards look like?
Well, I mean, I just seen them all where I went. I don't think there's too much of a racial issue, not from where I've been looking.
Okay.
But
I couldn't speak to the whole demographic. Sorry. I couldn't speak to the whole demographic of the prisoners or the guards, but in this letter, the expose about the Klan, this prisoner says that he's seen white COs with swastika, or rather SS tattoos, which is a Nazi symbol, and openly displaying Ku Klux Klan membership via tattoos. So I can't tell you about the overall demographics, but as we all know, the demographics of prisons in the U.S. Throughout the country are just vastly skewed towards over-imprisoning the black population.
Are there any groups organized among the prisoners that are attempting to struggle against the conditions? And if so, how do you understand their goals and their means?
Well, go ahead, Ms. Devil, because I really haven't heard of any groups, but I'm sure there is, Ms. Devil.
One letter that I got from a prisoner was, I found really heartening, the idea of United Nations Against the Machine, UNAM, is a group of formerly just nations. I think you might call them like race-affiliated gangs that are coming together across race lines to fight together against the systematic oppression that they're seeing. So I'm not sure about what the specific names of the United Nations are, but you might see, you know, Latino and Black gangs, and different groups coming together, putting aside hostilities in order to fight for their common purpose.
Sandy, is your son participating in the hunger strike?
No, he hasn't mentioned anything to me about a hunger strike.
Okay, just curious. You've mentioned that there was hunger strikes in prisons in Georgia in 2012, and I've heard word that prisoners who have been involved in the current hunger strikes at GSP hold on to the memory of the prior strikes. Can you talk a little bit about those hunger strikes and what this current one looks like, who's on it, and how long they've been on?
Absolutely. Now, I found out about this current strike through Kelvin Stevenson, who was involved in the 2012 hunger strikes and the 2010 hunger strikes, or the 2010 strikes. Now, so I've been writing Kelvin for a few years since the 2012 ones, because he was brutally beaten with a hammer by guards after the 2010 strikes in retaliation for his participation in those. And he subsequently, after filing a complaint, was placed in the strictest tier of the tier program, tier 3. So he was actually sent to a separate segregation prison and spent a lot of time there, finally has been downgraded to tier 2. So really you can see there's continuity between these strikes, because in a lot of ways it looks like the tier program itself and the horrible conditions on it are a response to the vastly successful 2010 strikes in terms of being a reprisal, and they want to keep control so that they can hope to prevent uprising like this happening again and being successful, which I think is why it's so important that we support these guys who are struggling, and despite all of the adversity that they're facing, are daring to speak out, knowing that that could mean that they get put on the tier program or that they spend more time on the tier program. You know, and if they're brave enough to do that, then it's the least that we can do to support them.
You've been listening to an interview rebroadcast from The Final Straw, a radio show based out of Asheville, North Carolina. To hear the rest of the interview or to learn more about The Final Straw, you can check out thefinalstrawradio.noblogs.org. And to find out more about the TIER program, you can check out the Atlanta Black Cross's website at atlblackcross.org. You are still listening to the Prison Radio Show here on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and CKUT.ca. Next, we are going to hear a song by Petunia, Politics and Police.
And police got the best of me. You'll see me walking around here with my head bowed to the street. That's when you know they've got me down. Politics is what I get in conversation round town. Don't talk about my car like that, it gets me all around. I don't wanna hear your plastic bag tragedy today. What kind of name is Petunia anyway? Politics and police got the best of me. You'll see me walking around here with my head bowed through the street. That's when you know they've got me down. Well, I try to make a change, I try to set things right. Politics and police always in my sight. That's when you know, babe, I got me down. Police is the little jail cell that's waiting for you. Police is the blockade up in everyone's mind. Police is the rich man's and it's helping for a few. Police is a TV set for when you're feeling blue. Politics and police got the best of me. You'll see me walking around here with my head bowed to the street. That's when you know they've got me down. That's when you know they've got me down. That's when you know, babe, I got me down.
To end today's show, we have a piece from Mumia Abu-Jamal talking about the recent shooting in Charleston, South Carolina, in which a young 21-year-old white man walked into one of the oldest black churches in Charleston and shot and killed 9 people.
Charleston. A young white man, barely at the age of his majority, walks into Charleston's most storied black church, and before he leaves, a new history is written. Attending a Wednesday night Bible study, he sits for nearly an hour, but his mind isn't on the life of Jesus nor his disciples. It's on murder, mass murder. When the door shuts behind him, 9 black souls, elders mostly, have been slain, Bibles in hand. The man, more boy than man, really, hadn't come to learn about religion, for he had a belief, white supremacy, or the profound hatred of black people. White supremacy is the mother's milk of Charleston, of South Carolina, of the South, of America. For surely as slavery funded and built America, the underlying principle was the devaluation, exploitation, and oppression of black life. It's the only thing that makes the church massacre in Charleston even remotely intelligible. 9 black people were sacrificed to the blind idol of white supremacy for the same reason that thousands of black men and women were lynched on American elms and pines, as sacrifices to an idea to perpetuate a system of economic injustice. Dylan Roof, the 21-year-old accused of this massacre, had no friends to speak of, no place to stay other than an associate's couch, no job, and a tenuous relationship with his parents. Isolated, alienated, alone in the world, his sole remaining possession was his whiteness, the only thing that gave his existence meaning. That was the energy that fueled the massacre in Charleston, South Carolina. It now sits like an incubus in the American soul, seething hatred and fear, waiting for more black lives to consume. From Imprisoned Nation, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.
The time is currently 11:58, and you've been listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. Check out past episodes of the Prison Radio Show at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Prison Radio Show. The next Prison Radio Show will air on Thursday, June 9th at 5 p.m. If you have any questions on anything that you've heard on today's show, or if you wish to be involved with the show, feel free to contact us at prison@ckut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are encouraged to participate. Folks can also leave a message on our listener comment line at 514-448-4041, extension 2547. If you're in prison, we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. feel free to write us at The Prison Radio Show, or simply write PRS, care of CKUT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, postal code H3A2B3. Thanks for tuning in.